Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Weekender. We are back after last week's break, where we were off partying with Lance for his wedding, nursing hangovers all over the place, which was fun.
Yeah.
Is it because you kids can't take your drink?
No, it's because we took too much drink. I think that's how it works.
I think it was more because the drink took me.
Well, you had a beer.
It
comes in pints.
Hi.
All right, we have tons to cover in this show. So we have news, we have Kickstarter. Do you have an interview for us, Sam?
Yeah, we do, with Jamie from Shadowborn. Very interesting stuff there. We'll finally find the answer to the riddle they've been plaguing us with the past few weekenders. A ton of stuff from Warhammer Fest, of course. Looking forward to that.
All right, first things first, though, I'm going to kick this one out to you, Jerry. The spring cleaning challenge is now coming to an end. So people have the last chance to get in, yeah?
Yep. So far, none of you have painted any of Rome like you were supposed to. This was the whole idea, to clear out my backlog by everybody stepping up and doing a bit of my room. No, none of yous are winning.
See, Jerry, whenever I hear you saying spring cleaning, I'm just imagining one of those horrible reality shows where hoarders have to get rid of like half their stuff.
Yeah, there'd be murder done. Don't worry, we know how to hide the bodies in Ireland. Never find yous. So for the people who haven't built Rome, they've been dusting off old projects or finishing off old pieces that they did years ago and bring them up to speed again.
Yeah.
So we've got a week left. Get your projects finished off, or if you haven't started, hammer it out quickly. There's a chance to win 4 £50 vouchers to the Otter Store.
Yeah, one of four.
Yeah.
So our four categories are Junior Beast, Best Tutorial, Best Idea, and Best Executed, if I remember correctly. If not, I apologize.
Yeah, standard operating procedure there for those.
Yes.
Your chance to get in, finish these off. We'll announce it when we get them in and have a review of them and see if anybody manages to beat Doug the Fug for the sheer volume of spring cleaning that he does on a regular basis.
Yeah, I'm actually a little sad about this one because I had planned to break out one of the original miniatures I painted for my first army, strip it and redo it, but as always, Beasts of War ate my hobby.
Right. That's a very weak excuse. You go home, don't you?
Justin, I don't think... I bought one of your first armies years ago.
I kept one model from it. It is that army.
Yeah. Now, I don't think if you wanted to strip the paint off one of those for this, I don't think you would have had the time because I left those sitting in Dettol before I moved to Japan, take a shot, and when I got back, they still had paint on them.
Yeah, so, you do realize the problem is you didn't transfer them into fresh Dettol because it becomes a saturated compound. Do science.
Yeah, even before that, I did so much to get the paint off those things. I had Dettol, fairy liquid.
Yeah, I remember.
Running over them with my car, the whole thing.
And you didn't film that for us.
No.
All right, the next important thing is... Well, anybody who is out there and is wanting to get in, you do have a little time left. So, you know, if you've got one model, even one model, if it's done beautifully, you can do it. I believe in you. Right. Moving along, Sam, you have an interview for us.
Yes. So I got the chance to sit down with the guys from Shadowborn to discuss exactly what it is they've been teasing us with. And we get to find out who the winner is for that riddle challenge.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Sam from On Tabletop, and I'm joined by Jamie Jolly from Shadowborn. How you doing, mate?
Hello. Good to be here.
Yeah. Now, if you've been watching The Weekender, you may remember we've had some riddles popping up. These are the guys behind that. And Jamie's here, hopefully, to give us the answer to those riddles. But before we get into that, Jamie, can you just introduce yourself and tell us a bit about Shadowborn?
We're a new company. The team are working on this game is 17 strong. We're all professionals working from different disciplines, and we've all worked on games before, but we're all coming together for the first time to make this huge flagship game, and Shadowborn Games has kind of been built around this dream of a game that we're going to talk about today.
Excellent. Yeah, as you can also see from the massive library of board games behind him, he's a man of good taste. He's got Discworld Ankh-Morpork up there. So, and that sound you hear now is just all of our viewers taking a shot because I mentioned Discworld. Okay. So, Without any further carry on, what is the answer to the riddle, Jamie? Can you reveal that for us now?
Right. Well, I'll tell you. I'll walk you through it really quickly, so you can get some closure on
Excellent.
This thing. So, what you're looking for? You were looking for 9 letters that make up an anagram, and there's a few clues in the image to help out with that. So one of the big clues early on is right at the bottom of the image. You'll see there's a bunch of numbers: 3, 0, 4, 0, 1, 0, 0, 1. And if you add up all those numbers, you end up getting 9. So you know that the 9 letters you're looking for are connected in some way to that line. If you then count up the amount of numbers in that line, there's 8 numbers in that string. And if you count up the amount of sentences on the tombstone, there are 8. And so what you've got is you've got a key that tells you how many letters there are in each of the sentences. Then the next bit is, you might have remembered there was a little bit at the bottom that says the marks of time will show the way. So on the tombstone, there's all these like scratches and cuts. If you look at those closely, you can see that they kind of work in two ways. They either underline some things or they work in parentheses over something. And so on that first line, you'll see in parentheses where sword and sorcery meet. And so that's like a big clue as to that's sort of key to the 3 letters you're looking for. And obviously where sword and sorcery, the words meet, is on the letters S, O and R.
Sorry, so just one second. Called it. Okay, go on.
So then obviously the next one has 0 because it's 0, but then the next one has 4. And underlined is the word Thor with the 4 letters. And so you've got 4 more letters, S-O-R-T-H-A-W. Then you go down another 2 and you have in parentheses again the head of the cardinal points. Now, this will get you, because it's very fair not to know this, because only some people know that the cardinal points is connected to compasses.
Hmm.
And so the cardinal points of a compass are northeast, south, west, and the head of the cardinal points would be N, north. So you've got N, and it says that's the end of that most ancient sign. So the end letter is N. And then lastly, right at the bottom, underlined is the O, the cursed O. And so when you add all those together, there's one anagram exactly that works out for these 9 letters, and that's the word Oathsworn. And that's the name of our game.
Oathsworn. Fantastic. I honestly, if I hadn't, yeah, of course I knew the answer to this one, but if I hadn't known it, I would never have guessed it. As soon as you brought numbers into the game, I was lost. I tried working it out.
It's a mad difficult like puzzle, and it's one of those things, because we know we can't make puzzles as difficult in the game. It's really difficult. We want to be able to make it much more interesting for more people, but for this one, like making a really hard puzzle just as a little opener and a little cryptic thing was a bit of fun. And just so you know, like 1 in 50 people could solve it genuinely. So we ended up having 87 people crack it, and that means probably several thousand people tried. And we're just so thankful for all you guys to having a go at it. And I hope you enjoyed it, even if you didn't necessarily get it.
Well, there you go. Congratulations if you're one of those people who managed to get it. Yep, you're better than me. So what is Oathsworn? Can you tell us about this game?
So Oathsworn is this mad brainchild of the team. We've got this... we've got a game we're calling a Twisting Tales game. It's a new type of game where, I suppose, for years people have been looking for a way of making making a role-playing game in a box, a game that you can play without the dungeon master, but it plays a really deep, interesting story. It takes you on a great adventure and is full of great combat and mechanics. And so, this we had to invent a bunch of new systems to do this, but we've created it's almost like a hybrid game. It's a big, an extravagant legacy adventure game where you have play the game in 2 modes. So you have a big story mode at the beginning that plays a little bit like the game books of the 90s. If you remember the games like Choose Your Own Adventure books or Fighting Fantasy books, it's got a bit of that. We've actually got this extravagant, like nearly 200,000 word novel that we've got that we can play through across multiple chapters. But we it's not just a book. It's integrated with maps and navigation on the tabletop. And so you're navigating maps and going to positions in an app, not just a book. You can use the book if you want to, but we've got an app, a companion app, and that's being read to you by a great narrator, who I'll talk about in a minute. But then you've got this story mode that follows the journey of something called the Free Company, the Oathsworn, and their hunt for weird beasties. And then once you've gone through the story mode and made all these like hard choices and tough decisions, you then go down into this this like teeth and steel encounter with giant monsters on the encounter map. And so you've got your terrain around, and you've got your company, and you're fighting these horrendous horrors. It's been a big project. We've been working on it for over 2 years now, and it's it's a full legacy game. So and what that means, if you're not familiar with legacy, it's one where you might be fighting on a map in one chapter, and the next one you're opening a special box and a whole new mechanic comes out, and now you're fighting in a whole different way. You might be unlocking mystery monsters and mystery boxes from the big box. So it's kind of like Christmas every time you come to it. Every play session is like a new experience. So that every time you're not just repeating the same thing, but you're really being led in new mechanics and new story all the way through from beginning to end.
Legacy systems are one of my favorite things in games at the moment. They really add to the narrative. I really like the idea of this almost 200,000 word novel you're playing through. It's a lot to dive into there.
Well, I was just going to say, like, that one of the things that I don't know, it's like weird. I as an adult actually went back to the old Ian Livingstone kind of like fighting fantasy games of the past, and I absolutely like loved those as a kid. And they were just so wonderful. And you know what? I came away from it thinking we need more of this. We need more of deep. And adult based stories that are really kind of I suppose a lot of us who are watching this and myself, we've grown up with this amazing legacy of the Dungeons and Dragons and the fight fantasies and things that came before, and now we've got this we're kind of grown up and ready to have like adult versions of these things. And so this is like a fully adult version game set in a real grimdark world with a whole new IP that's been just lovingly tended and grown over with this huge team. So yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Excellent. So you mentioned the team there. Who have you got working with you on this?
So we've just been so fortunate, my goodness. So we've got two wonderful artists. These are two Sue twins from China, who they've one's Dong Zhonglu and the other one's Dong Baolu, and he's a senior artist at Tencent, and Dong Zhonglu is a Weta workshop artist too.
Oh, wow.
And he's just absolutely wonderful. They've been creating this beautiful art. So Dong Zhonglu did this he did this image that you're seeing for the riddle, and he's done a bunch of they're just absolutely incredible. They learned to draw at the age of three, painting on the walls of their crib, and they taught each other. it was like they're like AI, you know, like they just like played against themselves and just became this incredible like art power. So they're just amazing the way they play off each other as well, doing the art, the landscapes and characters respectively. It's just so cool. Then we've got Francesca Berald. She's this wonderful award-winning medieval cartographer. She actually does these maps of the maps that we're using for the story. They're all done by hand, and it takes her a month to draw each one, and they're like, it's like a genuine map of these medieval cities set in this world. And she's just amazing. She's worked on loads of projects for GW and Game of Thrones and other stuff, so yeah, she's amazing. And then in terms of the writing for the story, we've been really blessed. We've got Aaron Dembski-Bowden, who you might know.
Yeah.
He's a lead writer on our team with a team of writers with him. Paul DeStefano and Mike Fletcher is on there. And we've actually got some other quite exciting people that we're talking to as well, getting them on to do some guest chapters that we can't reveal yet. Aaron's great. he's right like heart and center grimdark. Mike Fletcher as well. Like he was once voted the most grimdarkest writer there is. he did Beyond Redemption, amazing guy. His day job is he's a forklift choreographer. he does dancing. So in his day job he does that, and in his by night he's this like vigilante writer of grimdark. Then we've got. We've also got Toby O'Hara, my partner in the company. He's the sculptor. He's worked on loads of board games before, and he's going to do some of the sculpts that you'll see in a minute. Uke Alston, James Mesnick, PhD engineer working on our miniatures. We've got Paul Grogan, you might know from Gaming Rules. He's doing our rule book and sorting us out with making sure everything flows well, because in a game this big, you need some good expertise in kind of writing rules. You need someone whose job that is to get that down well. And then you've got, for our narrator, we're very pleased to say we've got James Cosmo, who is, he is Lord Commander Mormont in Game of Thrones.
Ah.
And he's just... my goodness, like meeting him in the flesh and recording some stuff with him, you're in a room with him, you're like, hello, Mr. Cosmo. And he's like, hello. Nice to meet you, Jamie. it's just one of those rooms you just walk into, you just immediately shrink, and you're just like, look at this guy. He's just such a badass. So yeah, we've got this, so James Cosmo is actually reading this thing. So if you want to go grimdark, you go Game of Thrones actor and He's just doing an amazing job. So as I said, this app that you have in the game, you don't have to read this to each other, because 200,000 words, you don't actually read all the 200,000 words, because a lot of it is the choices you make. So you might read like a third of that to actually get through the game. But you, instead of having to necessarily read it to one another in a game group, you can have it read to you by the companion app, and it all kind of flows naturally. And a lot of the work is done behind the scenes by the companion app, which is wonderful. You know, the computers can do a lot of the lifting nowadays in these kind of heavier games that really takes the weight off us.
It sounds like you just walked into the middle of a gaming convention and shouted Avengers Assemble. You've got an amazing crew there.
Yeah, so it's amazing how it's all come together, and they're just all like really passionate about it. My goodness, they're just so wonderful, and we're just bouncing off one another so much that like just everything's sort of cascading into this thing. So every time we've got new mechanics, new artwork, new ideas for the story just pouring out of these meetings, and it's very exciting to see what we can make. I mean, just to give you a quick idea of like the world and what we're making. So Oathsworn is set in a pretty dystopian world. It's not our world, it's a different world, but it's one where basically humanity has collapsed. It's in a sort of medieval feudal kind of society, but humanity has collapsed under the weight of a coming doom. It wasn't war or plague, but it was the Deepwood. And the Deepwood is these horrendous dark trees, this forest, endless forest that rose up, and when it came, it consumed all of the farmland, it consumed the villages and anything that wasn't overly protected, and all that was left was these bastion cities, these quarantine zones, islands in a sea of death. And humanity was cut off from one another, and many of the cities collapsed in on themselves in cannibalism and want and starvation. But some of them survived, and those that survived did so at extreme measures. And then just as people thought it couldn't get any worse, that's when the monsters came. A bunch of stuff came from the shadows of the trees and started assailing the cities. This is where the pact was formed. And so you have the free companies, which are the group that you play in the game. They are basically given the king's writ to go beyond the walls and to fight what's kind of, you know, what normal people would run away from. They stand basically in the breach between humanity and the stuff of the Deepwood. And it's pretty cool, because you've got you're basically, imagine like your Dutch's team from Predator. Like you're the best that man's got, right? You're the best that the people can create, and yet you know you're not up to the task of what you're facing, because you're facing something else. And so colloquially, the free companies are called the 60-seconders, because that's how long an average free company member will last in the combat. So those that survive become these kind of very grim, grisly veterans who, they don't take crap. And you're basically playing one of these elite group as you go through the game, yeah, hunting monsters and revealing the world.
I absolutely love the sound of this world. It strikes me as a mix between Nausicaä, Valley of the Wind, funnily enough, and the folk horror elements of the old Warhammer Fantasy battles. I really want to explore this setting further. What sort of characters and creatures can we expect to find in there? Because for me, of course, monsters are preeminent. What are we going to find in this world?
Well, we don't want to reveal too much early on, but what I can tell you is that we've got each of the encounters that you have. It's less like a traditional dungeon crawler where you're fighting lots and lots of different types of creatures. But what you are fighting is lots of a particular, like you're fighting a particular encounter, and then that encounter may come with a giant boss monster and then waves of like adds and mobs and things like that. Something akin to what you might experience in MMOs, sort of RPGs. You might get multi-phase boss fights and all this kind of thing. And so there's the whole vast array of madness that people like Arendowski Bowden and myself can come up with. There's any creatures that can fall out of our deprived minds, that's what you're going to be fighting. And these are coming in these amazing miniatures, and we'll maybe show up a few of those in a minute. But and then in terms of the characters that you are going to be playing, you've got the free companies are made up of primarily it's a human race that you're playing, but there are also other races. So we've created some new races. We have the Ursus that are a giant predatory like war bear type group. They actually just they occasionally just have one lone warrior who just walks up to the city gates and they let people let them in, because they know that they're only there to fight the monsters. Their whole deal is just fighting monsters. They're not really bothered about humanity or saving anything, but they just want to. Their thing is that they have they can write. They have armor. They start off basically naked with a set of claws, and over time they can add to their armaments by earning their armor, by having a story to tell. If they've killed something awesome, they've had a good hunt, they can then add a new piece of armor to their ensemble and then write their story on the armor. And so every war bear you see has the full bedecked story of their life written on their armor. And so the more armored a war bear is, the more they've been around and the more they've done and sort of thing. So that's why they're there. You've got this the Adendri. The Adendri have they're a race of kind of like plant people, I suppose, is the thing. They have the witchwood, and they've grown up in that thing, and that's been they've been in a 500-year war with the deepwood, and so some of their peoples have become refugees in the human cities, and you can play as some of those, and each of the human classes, they come from different cities, some of them, and they all represent very different cultures and different backgrounds. And so you'll see some familiar kind of archetypes, but you're also, everyone has its own unique twist, and we don't have any sort of necessarily any hard like hard healers, hard tanks, that kind of thing. Like, everybody's in there to kill something when it comes to things that are all hands on deck when it comes to bringing these beasts down.
Now, you have sent us over some of the STL files for a few of these. I assume these would be the player characters here. We have first here a girl with a bow. Watch out. Oh,
yep.
Getting past one of the big monsters there. We'll look at it later. We go in a bit closer here. So there are a lot of different character types you can play as.
Yes, yep. There are six in the base game.
And now, who was it you said that sculpted these?
So this is Toby O'Hara. He's just like, he's life and soul, a sculptor to his bones, but he's also got the unique qualification of also being an engineer as well. And so he's a sculptor / engineer. So when he's sculpting also from an engineer's mind. And so it's amazing what he can get out of a mold and the way he thinks. Him working with James Mesnick, who's a PhD engineer, who has like 32 other PhDs underneath him. But he's working on this, and just we've got some software that helps us basically visualize the sculpting process and things like that. He rewrote the code to the software to make it work better, so that he could get more out of the program, so that we could get more detail in and get it rendering quicker and all this kind of thing. He's just amazing. And so the models that you're looking at there, they're just really just a complete passion project of getting the most detail we possibly can onto the models. When you're looking at those models, it's good to keep in mind that the characters are 50mm models, so they're very large. If you played kind of Dungeon Crawl stuff before, you might find that normally you're kind of looking at maybe 32mm or something like that. These are very large to get extra stuff in. They're also push fit models, so a way of getting lots and lots of detail onto a model is by turning it into push fit, so that it can come together. So there's no glue required. It all comes together really nice. And actually, they were kind of they're pushing a new way of doing the push fit, so that the key system locks. So there's absolutely no way of getting wrong when you put it together. They're very big. They've got loads of table presence, and we're just getting as much detail as we possibly can onto them to make them really good for painting and just feeling like you're there.
What made you decide to go with with the larger scale miniature? Why go with that rather than 30mm?
I think part of it is the detail, the wanting to be able to get really good detail on there, bringing it out. But also, I think it's the game is quite an intimate game, right? So you're not playing armies across things. You're playing a concentrated group, and you're then fighting like one large monster. You're fighting a large monster with a bunch of adds and other stuff like that, and so it kind of lent itself to that, to make it so that you feel really close in and up to the action. And even like at any point you just look on the table, you just feel that you're there, and it's just one of the advantages of going a bit bigger with the models. You get some of those advantages.
Now, we do have one of those big monsters here to show off. Look at this one. So this is a big rat creature covered in smaller rats. What's going on with this?
Yeah, so that's our brood mother. She's This is a this. So just so you know, just as kind of got a, something to gauge while this is a not very hard fight in our world and not very far in.
This is your version of a rat encounter.
Yeah. So this is not. This is a basic kind of level. But the but yeah, this is a. She's 120 millimeters to her back. She's literally the size of a real rat.
Wow.
So when you put her on the table, she's boom and she's there. And she has this horde of rats that she has with her, and they're dropping off her back all the time and then coming at the group. And so you're spawning stuff off her the whole game, and they're starting to mob the group while you're trying to deal with them. You've got to take her down, and she's running all over the place, running amok, taking out the terrain and eating people. And yeah, it's a pretty vile fight.
Fantastic. It reminded me of the older Rat King legends of those nests of rats. Ugh. So when is this game due for release? When can we see more of it?
So we're pushing for an October Kickstarter with this. All hands are on deck getting this ready, and I think October is going to be realistic. So October is what we're aiming for, and but before then, if you want to see the game, you want to come and have a look at the models and understand the combat a bit better, then we are going to be at UK Game Expo at the end of the month, and we're going to be at Gen Con as well if you're in America and want to come see us. So yeah, we won a position at the Entrepreneurs Avenue for that. So we'll be over there at Gen Con, and we're next near Games Workshop in UK Game Expo. So what we're doing is we're just going to have demos of the game there, so you can come and see what it looks like, come and see the miniatures, and just come and say hi. Really, we're new, and we just really want to meet new people and start building a community around this world.
Excellent. We'll definitely have to get over and take a look at what you've brought with you. So where can people go to find out more in the meantime?
So what we've got at the moment is we have our website, and on our website, which is now open, you can so before we had it with where you could get through the puzzle, and you could come and get a little early look at it, but now the website is fully open. And so if you're interested in getting on this journey with us, come and have a look at the game more. If you come on the website, there's a newsletter sign up sheet, so there's a bit of information on the website, but also to keep it up with updates, once a month we're going to be sending a newsletter out just to show people what's going on with the team, what everybody's doing, and how we're progressing to the final stages. So yeah, come and sign up for the newsletter, and that's probably the best way to keep in contact with us, and there'll be sign ups at the conventions as well.
Excellent. Okay, one last question before I let you go here. I'm sure everyone who've managed to succeed in solving that riddle is desperate to know who won the prize and what was the prize.
So the prize is a full copy of the game. Mm-hmm. When we get around to publishing, so we'll send that automatically and we'll get in contact with the winner. And I'm proud to say that Mark Suckup, congratulations, mate, you won. You did it. So I'm afraid I don't know where you live, so we'll get in contact and we'll sort that out.
Okay, congratulations very much to the winner there. Okay, Jamie, thank you so much for coming on board and telling us about Oathsworn. And hopefully we'll get more riddles from you to tease everyone with.
I have to get the box and we'll see what's in the game.
Excellent. Okay, if you like the sound of Oathsworn, be sure to head over to the Shadowborn website, check it out, and let us know your thoughts in the comments below.
Some really interesting stuff there. I love the sound of Oathsworn. Mm-hmm. And if we take a quick look here, there is the website. It's now up and running if you want to go and find out more about Oathsworn. Mm. So that dark, almost folk horror feel to it.
Them some big ass rats.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. The models look great.
Mm-hmm.
For the brief bit we saw of the models look absolutely fantastic, and I can't wait to see what else they have mm-hmm. with them at UK Games Expo this year.
Ah, so they're going to be there?
Yeah.
All right, well, it is fast approaching as well, so we will have to catch up with the guys while we're there. Right, I have to say, I am mildly disappointed with that riddle.
Oh, why?
Because I thought I had been clever and sussed it, and I spent about 3 hours one night trying to figure it out. It was a 9-letter anagram, right?
Yeah, 9-letter anagram.
Yeah, I thought the word that the anagram was being based from, because it was the right number of letters, was tombstone. They were trying to be clever.
Nope, way off.
I was way off, and I was wrong, and I'm glad I didn't say it on the show. There, I could have wasted your time too. All right.
What word did you manage to get out of Tombstone?
I didn't. And I was just checking. Like, constant.
Yeah. Where did you get the M?
It was on a tombstone.
Oh, I see. You would.
And it's a 9-letter word.
I see. So you were just going, ignore the text. It's the thing it's on.
Exactly. I thought they were being super sneaky and doing it that way, which would have been cool.
Okay.
Certainly right. Different.
Let's kick into the news, shall we? What's up first, Sam?
Well, going from one dark thing to another dark thing, Thingborn have announced Escape the Dark Sector.
Ooh, show us.
Yeah. Now, this is something I know people have been very excited for a while. We've been speculating the idea of Thingborn taking the Escape the Dark Castle idea and heading to a sci-fi setting for it. Mm-hmm. And here it is. It's just been announced. We don't have that much to go on yet. You're going to play as the crew of an impounded ship trapped in the brig of a large space station.
I see.
And you're going to have to blast your way out of there and fight your way through to try and find your ship.
I see. Now, my hope for this one is you actually get some half-decent weapons, but some super tough enemies to deal with.
Yeah, well, they are bringing in some new rule mechanics. It is going to be based upon the Escape the Dark Castle mechanics, but it brings in things like range combat, tactical actions like flanking, ambushing, reloading, and giving you all cybernetic implants to play with as well. So it does look like it's going for that retro sci-fi feel for it.
Yeah. Jerry, what would you like to see in this? What's your favorite sci-fi weapon that you would like to play with in this game? Some form of plasma cannon, perhaps?
No. Laser sword.
Laser sword.
Laser swords are the best.
Yeah. Good shout.
Yeah. It would have to be. They'd have to have a laser sword in there somewhere.
See, I don't know. I want like thermonuclear hand grenades.
No, I run paranoia games. Those are not a good idea.
That was a brilliant idea. You know, Dr. Pepper's thermonuclear hand grenade. What's the worst that can happen?
Well, the Kickstarter for this
cancer.
Is...
cancer is the answer. Anytime nukes are involved, it's always cancer.
Yeah. The Kickstarter for this is set to launch at UK Games Expo on the 31st of May, so we'll have to make sure to get over and take a look at that.
Yeah, I'll be running directly to these guys because I love Escape the Dark Castle. It's one of those games you can sit down and play it with friends, or if you're just bored and have an hour, you can just sit down and say, I'm going to see how I can do on my own without arguing with my mates.
There's the challenge.
Well, no, because then I'm arguing with myself.
Oh, better. Much better.
Okay, moving on from that, we have new battle systems terrain coming to Kickstarter. Yep, we just got this teaser so far for a new set of fantasy terrain from Battle Systems. And it's going to be coming to Kickstarter in June. Now, we don't know much more about what it will be besides this image so far. Yeah. You can see we've got a nice fantasy town set up with those sort of classic medieval European style slate tile buildings. Looks like there's some ruins in the background there, some towers. And yeah, I am very excited to see this.
See, I have to wonder, is Colin sitting there thinking, well, I've got core space, can I do core adventure? Yeah,
that's exactly what I'm excited to, what this could represent. Fantasy has always been my first love over sci-fi. I much prefer magic spells over lasers. And the idea of getting that sort of narrative exploration game that Core Space gave us and setting that in a fantasy world.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to see that. And even if they don't go that path, it's great terrain to play around.
Well, there's nothing to say you couldn't just reskin the game yourself and use it with this terrain.
True.
I mean, like, I don't know about you, but anytime I play a role-playing game, I play a bit of an amoral git who just runs around stealing everything. If I can have this on the tabletop and just be doing that, I'm going to be happy. I'm going to rob everybody's house there.
You're weird.
What? If it's not nailed down, I'm having it.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
Yeah, right down to the dragon droppings. I can sell that.
If you say so.
Brings your tomatoes up a tree.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, poisoned arrows.
Oh, fair. I'm not even going to delve into that.
But you just have a little bag hanging off your head, dip it in, bong.
And for that, you are okay with going around smelling of shit.
You know, I don't have to smell the character. It's the NPCs that have to deal with me.
Well, I suppose that's one way of going for it.
I'm staying out of that.
Yeah.
The terrain is lovely.
The terrain is absolutely beautiful. Lots of little extras going on, just little bits of detail like the log shed there. As you look, the more I look at this, the more I see I want to play it. And of course, I think Battle Systems already do a fantasy dungeon set.
They've done actually a full internal and external set for a castle.
Yeah.
So this could actually let you populate the outside of your castle to do like the little town just beneath the Lord's castle, which could be very cool.
Yeah, I don't even need a whole town. I just need enough buildings to throw down for Kings of War.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. So, very true.
Yeah.
Lovely stuff. Cannot wait to see what they're doing with this.
Okay. Now, moving on from that, now we've got those two quick updates out of the way, we are heading into a massive amount of news coming out of Warhammer Fest. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have things I loved, things I despised.
Okay, well, I'm sure you'll get a chance to go over each of those. We're going to split these up over some of the different...
Yeah, bits. Sure. Do your thing.
Starting off with Warcry Splintered Fang Tribe for Warcry. Mm-hmm. Warcry Splintered Fang Tribe for Warcry. I can do English. Yeah.
Try saying that five times fast.
This is the new tribe that have been previewed for the skirmish game that is set within Age of Sigmar, based around warring tribes of chaos.
Yeah. Now, I do have a gripe. Was Sigmar not described as a skirmish game when it first came out?
Yes, because it is.
It's, yeah, large-scale skirmish.
Okay, large-scale skirmish, small-scale skirmish. Fair enough. I'm happy enough.
They still have... In Age of Sigmar, you're still using units for the mm-hmm. most part, but everyone moves independently, a bit more like they did in Middle-earth.
Okay. All right, well, let's have a look down through, see what we've got here.
Yeah, so, as I said, these are the Splintered Fang, and they're the cult that live within the realm of life, and they're all about serpents and poison. They're a very different look and feel to any other chaos worshippers we've really seen in a lot of Games Workshop's games in the past. They have far more of a Roman gladiator look to them. And as we can see with this guy, you see a lot more of the diversity going on in Chaos, because here we have an elf. I'm not sure how they want us to pronounce it now. They spelled it A-E-L-F. It's an elf. Who has thrown in his lot with the dark gods.
Mm. I mean, like it looks as if he's got into camp and just took an angle grinder to most of his armor.
It's one way of doing it. But then they already, well, assuming he's a dark elf, they already worship the bloody-handed god, so...
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
This is one that's gone straight up for chaos. This is for the four gods of chaos.
There's nothing non-chaotic about that.
Yeah, true. So I'm really looking forward to seeing more from Warcry, and actually, I forgot about these. A sneak peek of what's happening in Warhammer Underworlds. Some of the monsters going on here.
I'm not sure. This lion looks a little bit too cartoony.
Too cartoony?
Yeah, I think it's maybe the paint scheme. It's very, very bright. You know, I expect something a little darker, a little grittier.
Well, it does say this is coming for a new warband in Warhammer Underworld. So I'm just wondering which warband would feature a bright lion like that. I'm guessing probably a new group of
what's the
Stormcast the Eternals? I keep wanting to call them Sigmarines. Thank you.
Because there's not like all griffins and things. This, I'm guessing, Godsworn Hunt, maybe.
Maybe.
Elves.
Maybe. Possibly.
Although it would be better if it was white.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, yes.
White lion.
So. Yeah. If we saw a return of the White Lions of Trace, I would be a very happy man.
It'd be nice.
Moving on, here we have the Citadel Contrast paints. This mm-hmm. is the new paint range that Citadel are bringing out, which is set to take a step out of the painting process. So here we see the traditional method of base, shade, technical, and ready to go. This one, you just paint the new contrast paint straight onto a primed model, do the technical side of things, and it should be ready to go. Now, I'm unsure about how good a final effect this will have. We can see a couple of them demonstrating this below. Mm. And they all look very vibrant, very bright, which is something I'm trying to achieve in my own miniatures. And as someone who is not a great painter, is
gets very bored of painting very quickly.
Yeah.
Having something like this that takes a step out of it, I'm all for that. But I don't think you're going to see quite as high level of finish with these miniatures, with these paints, as you do from the regular standard.
See, this is the mistake that every single painter makes whenever they come to the hobby. They want to paint what's on the box.
Mm.
They want to paint exactly what they're seeing from an heavy metal painter or whoever they are, you know, like Angel Heraldes or something. This is something that just takes the thinking out of it a little bit, makes it a little simpler, you know, so it just simplifies things down, get it tabletop ready, and then afterward you can work on it all day long.
Hmm.
What do you think, Jerry? It's paint.
It's, yeah, it's a contrast wash. It's nothing new.
Hmm.
I'm wondering what the base is, because they're saying that they're going to sell the base separately.
You see, it's probably just one of the color primers that they use.
No, not that. The actual medium that it's mixed in, they're going to be selling it separately.
Oh, I see.
Because I've been making them for years using floor polish.
Really?
All you do is you add your pigment, ink, paint, or whatever it is to floor polish, and you get a high gloss finish like that that works similar to a colored dip. So that's more or less what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to spray these either white or some sort of bone color.
Or maybe a gray?
No, because they tried. Because I was listening to somebody from Games Workshop talking about it, and they tried various types of their primer or base colors until they came down to a choice of two different, either white or bone. Came up the best. Gray's just too neutral, and you lose, especially for the yellows and stuff, you'll end up with greens and not yellow. So... yeah, it could be handy if you're doing bulk paint jobs. It's not my cup of tea. I would use my contrasts for batch painting, but I use them essentially like a dip.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use them to completely replace a color. I use them to get quick shading.
Yeah.
If that can be done with these, happy days. Although a bottle of floor polish is a couple of quid, I can't imagine the medium that they're going to be selling will be that cheap.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's six one half dozen the other.
You see, for me, this kind of breaks with the method of painting that I use. Now, I will give it a go just to see what it's like. But my normal method is I color prime, I do my detail work, I throw a wash on, tidy up, and I'm done.
Yeah. You know? Well, that takes the color prime away.
You're exactly, but then I have to paint that color over the entire thing and then do all my detail work.
Yeah.
So depending on your method, this could actually increase the number of steps you need.
No, because this goes down like a wash.
Yep.
So if you're color priming and then washing,
they've been calling this
is exactly the same.
They've been calling this the one thick coat.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're missing what I'm saying. So I have my color prime, I do my details.
Yes.
This will have to prime this, then onto my details.
Right.
So for my method of painting, it would increase the number of steps I would use.
Okay. Well, it will be interesting to see once people start getting it into their hands, how people react to it and what new ways people find to even use it.
Yes,
that's something I'm always interested in, to find out how more professional painters can come up with new techniques using these.
It's like the liquid green stuff when it came out. John actually used it to do stippling on tank to actually give cast holes on it, which was really cool.
That was the best thing that stuff was used for. It was all the different textures.
Wouldn't use it for filling anything, certainly.
It shrinks a little too much.
Squadron Green, people have been using putties like that for years.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be interesting. It's a different type of wash, but it's non-water based and takes about 20 minutes to dry. So, you know, it really is about batch painting big armies quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, what's next, Sam?
Well, next we have got a lot of stuff for 40K. So now it's time for you to do a happy dance, Justin.
All right. There are two reasons to do a happy dance for this. Number one, I'm getting a super-sized Primaris Marine that I can play about with. Number two, Games Workshop have broken into Japan and are working with Bandai. This is huge because this model company does some of the finest multicolor model kits you will ever see. I've talked about it on the show before. They do kits where you will clip the hand off a mecha and it's already articulated on the sprue, which is just madness.
Do you think that GW will let them do that? Because that will surely impose on what GW sell.
It's being made by Bandai.
Yeah, but Bandai do so many things. But most of my Black Series stuff for Star Wars is Bandai, and none of that is model kits. They don't just do model kits.
Oh, I know that.
So
but...
I think you're more likely to see a separation where they won't want Bandai start. Because if Bandai start making the model kits and it does well, then Bandai will just buy GW.
Would that be such a bad thing?
Well, because Bandai don't care about games.
They're far more focused on the collectible aspect.
Yeah, but it's one of those things. I've talked to people in the industry for years, and they say Japan is the hardest place to break into to actually get anything done, to get interest, to get traction.
It's because it's very different culture.
It's more about the collection rather than the game.
Yeah.
That's why they started that. Those set of blind buys, the Heroes set.
Yeah, the second set of which is currently out in Japan, but not out in the UK yet, which is the Terminators.
Yeah, and then they announced the third set recently, actually.
What are they going to be?
Death Guard.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So I knew those would catch your fancy.
Yeah.
This is where having contacts in Japan is useful. I can run a supply chain.
Oh, I'm taking straight back to Breaking Bad.
Okay. What?
You're running a supply chain.
I've never watched it. Anyway, these aren't the only collectibles that are doing, of course. We also have the little chibi models that we've been seeing previewed earlier. I am not a big fan of these, I have to say.
I like the Sister Battle and I like the Beaky.
The Beaky Marine. In the corner?
Yeah, top right corner.
Yeah, there he is.
I think it's quite cool.
I lost my mouse. I just like that he's holding an orc head.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's doing that because that's the Space Marine from the front cover of Rogue Trader, who was holding an orc head exactly that fashion.
So he is. Yeah.
I'm not a fan of Chibi, but then that's because it's that sort of super cute anime thing.
Yeah, I know.
So it's not me.
It's not for me either.
I would probably grab a couple of these, and I'm sure they will sell. There are people out there who will just buy for this.
Oh, yeah.
Although the one they did a while back that I didn't like was the Funko Pops. I thought they were weird.
It's anything with big bubbly heads.
Not a big fan. But if we move on from there, we do get to some of the more exciting gaming stuff, including the return of Aeronautica Imperialis.
Yes!
It's a poor man's Bombers Over the Sulphur River.
I get to play fighter planes in 40K. I'm happy.
That was Bombers Over the Sulphur River. Quality game. Andy Chambers would tell you.
I have to admit, I missed Aeronautica Imperialis the first time around. I know almost nothing about this game.
The one thing that makes me want to play this more than anything is one of the novels, which is called Double Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's written by Dan Abnett, and it follows a Imperial Guard regiment who are basically pilots fighting an air war, and actually hearing how an air war works on a planet in the 40K universe just sounds so much fun, which makes me want to play this game.
I just want to see more orc aircraft. They were my favorite things when flyers started to become more prominent in 40K. Seeing the orc bombers and jets starting to appear was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, if I can get myself some Thunderbolts, some Lightnings, maybe a couple of Marauder squadrons.
Very, very frightening. Happy.
What?
You said Thunderbolts and Lightning. Very, very frightening. Me, Galileo.
Oh, God.
Okay. We don't get that reference.
We just weren't doing it.
Yeah. For it.
Savages.
Those signs, I think you'll find.
Yeah, moving on from that, we have the return of Warhammer 40K Apocalypse. Yeah, there is a big box on the way to let you play out these massive games of 40K.
Mm.
It's going to include new rules for various formations to include in your armies, as well as new cards and tokens to keep track of the game, and all of the rules for the individual armies are going to be available as free downloads in PDF form.
Yeah, this is for... Alright, I know a fellow over in England, he actually once in a while does an Apocalypse game where I think they have like 30 or 40 Titans turn up to the one game, and they just take over like an entire hall. They have a custom-made gaming map for this thing, and it's mad.
Incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, now we've got the big member suite. I would love to see a full-on Apocalypse game played out there.
Ooh, do you have a weekend?
Well, I don't, but I would love to come in, poke my head in and go, that's cool.
Do you have a weekend to set it up? Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the rules actually become, because previous editions of Apocalypse worked with simpler versions of 40K, and they've added in so many additional rules, and I've seen how long it takes people to try and get a couple of turns in here.
Yeah.
They're going to have to strip out massively or do something unconventional to make it feasible.
The biggest thing that slows 40K down and disengages a player is the big I go, you go. I move all my stuff, I shoot all my stuff, and I'm waiting on you. If this is Apocalypse and you have a massive
your filth list, where you get like 144 shots from like a squad. Yeah. Now imagine having to do that dice roll for 10,000 points.
Yeah, I know.
that's one turn and then you're packing up and going home because you've been there for 8 hours type of thing. It's they're going to need to do something massive. So it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Well, it's kind of why I run my forces the way I do. I do lots of the same thing. So I can just do one big dice roll instead of going, okay, I've got 5 dice for that, 3 dice for that, 2 dice for that, 5 dice for that, 10 dice for that. That gets really old really quick.
Also, will they bring the templates back?
I miss the templates. I think the templates were far more.
Because having the big dustbin lid of a template where you just go everything under this has gone away.
They are looking to reduce the downtime between turns. Mm. So damage is going to be resolved at the end of a given turn.
I heard that, and that worries me even more because, when you're expanding the amount of things that's happening, if I shoot at your squad, and then I move on and shoot at your squad with something else, and then I go and do something else, and then I come back and that squad still hasn't been killed, and I shoot them. You're going to have so much bookkeeping to do on everything, because you're not just removing it now and then going on. You're going, right, he's taken 17 wounds this turn. He's now taken another 5 wounds. That puts him up to 22. But I ignored one to 21. That's right, isn't it? What's right? 21. Is 21 right? I have no idea what you're talking
about. I'm lost already.
And then you're going, yeah. And then replicate that multiple times.
Yeah, and then if you try to do that with token tracking, it's just they're all over your table.
Yeah, an abundance of tokens is one of my pet peeves in gaming.
I love big games of Apocalypse look great. We've played some fantastic ones in the past, but they really need to do something game-changing to run Apocalypse with the current 40K rules without actually just making it drag.
The old speed bumps of going, can't move on.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting to hear what people think of that one. Mm-hmm. Moving down a bit, we have some big vehicles coming
out. This one makes me unhappy.
I'll just say this is the Repulsor Executioner that's coming for the Primaris, the new grav tank that they're bringing out.
Yeah.
What about it makes you unhappy, Justin?
Is it all the dice?
It's all the different dice. It's all the different dice because it's lots of different weapon systems. So what I was saying, this is the main kind of criminal for that kind of dice rolling in the game because it's got like 7 or 8 different weapon systems. Each one's got a different weapon profile and I have to roll each one individually. Slows the game down no end.
I just don't think it looks as good without tracks. This is something because I started out as an Eldar player. I love anti-grav, but they don't look as...
Put it on a snow base and tell everybody it sleds.
Don't worry about that. Yeah, I suppose you could, yeah.
You could.
Yeah. I don't mind different weapon systems on the tank because I've always had them. So my Imperial Guard are just, so many executioners as far as I can see.
I don't know. For me, it's something that always slows it down. It's why in my squads, I try not to throw in way too many different specialist weapons. He's got a power fist. He's got a chain sword. He's got this. He's got this. He's got this. I just want to say, okay, here's how many attacks you got. I'm going to roll them all at your face.
What I will say is, game-wise, I can't see the rule it fits because it's got so many anti-infantry weapons on it. And then it's also got a battle cannon on it, that gun is.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's also the only one of 2 transport options the Primaris currently have.
Oh, it's transport, of course. That explains it then.
Yeah, so...
Anybody who hasn't seen the Pentagon Papers, go and watch the Pentagon Papers. You won't be disappointed.
I don't think I know of this.
Oh, it's a film about how the Bradley transport was developed.
Yeah.
And it took the American Army, something like 15, 20 years to develop the Bradley. Mm. Because they kept going, it doesn't have a turret on it. What do you mean? It doesn't have a turret because it's a troop carrier.
Yeah.
But if it had a turret on it, then it could fire at things. Going, oh, no. And by the end of this 20 years, they'd put missile launchers on it, a turret, that had to take out crew capacity to put in ammo. Mm-hmm. So, it's a Bradley for Space Marines.
Pretty much. That's amazing. Pretty much.
Oh, it's gone up my estimation now.
That has just completely changed my view of that. I love the idea.
My pet peeve is just there's so many different weapon systems. If I could just get this thing with some decent, twin heavy onslaughts on there with a heavy bolter, I'd be happy.
Just clip those things off and stick them on then.
Well, this isn't the only vehicle, of course. The Adeptus Mechanicus have some cool things here.
This one's quite funky.
The Doom Rider. Now, I've seen these have actually been a bit controversial among some really like it, some really don't. I absolutely love it.
It's a D-Day landing craft.
Yeah. It's a D-Day landing hovercraft.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that hovercraft style. And it fits with the more pulp look of the Adeptus Mechanicus.
Yeah, really sort of well. That more 50s sci-fi feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this the only picture of this you've got?
There is another variant of this vehicle.
I've seen another picture of that variant, but with scuttly legs on it.
Oh, you're...
Not here, no, not here. The other one I've got here is the Disintegrator.
Yeah, no, there are, and they're the same two tanks, but that one's got the walker legs, like the, call it, the Dune thing.
Yeah, the thing that the Defiler came from, Dune Crawler, yes.
Yes, yeah. And then the one above has more tiny, scuttly, spiky legs,
like a centipede sort of thing.
Yeah, that type of thing. So
that's kind of cool.
I like scuttly legs.
Yeah,
because they've already got that.
Are you sure that someone hasn't done Photoshop wizardry to it?
No, because it came out from Warhammer Fest.
That's right.
I seen those before I seen this, because I didn't realize this existed.
I see. It is quite cool. I like the idea of it. It's nice to see the Mechanicus getting some love.
Hmm. So I have to ask, since you've seen both the leg variant and the hovercraft variant, which one do you prefer?
I really like the leg variant, but now I've seen the hover. I would have the hovercraft for the troop transport.
Yeah.
Because that just seems more sensible. Yeah. And then have scuttly leg variant for...
the Disintegrator.
For that.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
That battleship looking fella.
I'm less keen on the Disintegrator just because of that massive battering ram.
Oh, no,
the
I quite like
there.
That. You know, with the cow catcher on the front, that's pretty badass.
That's just to keep people off while you're firing your rocket straight into them.
Yeah, true enough. Mm. I just noticed with the steering
fins
at the back here, the whole thing reminds me a bit of Thunderbirds if they decided to go on the offensive.
Or a fat Dalek.
Or a fat Dalek, yes. That is a Dalek.
No fat shaming. No fat shaming the Daleks.
Yeah. Okay, meanwhile, the Chaos Forces aren't to be outdone.
I'm happy.
As they are getting... The Chaos Knights Codex.
Yeah. This is something I've been waiting for because up until now, it literally was you just had the two-player box that you got with a knight each in it, and you had some supplementary rules for Chaos Knights. Now we've got this, we're going to be able to fully kit them out the way we want to. That, and they're doing some kits for these two.
They are indeed.
And they're spiky.
They are very spiky. They just took a Chaos Knight and stuck all the spikes on it.
Well, I mean, like, it's even the weapon designs, they're just a little bit more spiky, chaosy, down and dirty, grimy, nice. That, and I love the paint scheme for this one with all that rust effect on it.
The model does look fantastic, and the kit is really good. I have to say, I'm a little disappointed, and not by the model at all. This is just me feeling, I don't know, this is going to sound really stupid, because... The whole point of Chaos is it's corrupting and that any of the Imperial forces could fall to Chaos.
Yes.
But it feels almost like every time the Imperium gets something new from Games Workshop, they immediately feel, oh, we've got to make a Chaos variant of this.
Well, no, because Primaris Marines haven't fell yet.
What do you mean haven't fell? They were never loyal to begin with. I suppose. His mouth. It's very Wallace and Gromit.
Wallace and Gromit.
There's no
cheese. Yes.
Like he's got a big smile on his face.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, this is also one of the easiest kits to get painted quickly. I think I did my own one in like 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you just leave the armor plate off, spray the base black, dry brush the crap out of it, spray your armor plates another color, do the detail work, glue it on, and you are done.
Yeah, but as you can see from that, they haven't just done that with this one. There's so much extra bits of detail
Even like down to little bits of graffiti on the thigh there.
Yeah. It is a fantastic model, and I'm most looking forward to seeing the conversions people come up with. You using these and then taking them that extra step further to show which Chaos God they're devoted to.
I really want to see someone do Nurgle with this. Mm. Just make it down, dirty, grimy, slimy.
Yeah. If we move on a bit further, we have got some more demons on the way from Forge World.
Mm-hmm.
And these are demon brutes representing Chaos Undivided.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something we've really seen much of before, demons of Undivided Chaos. And no, I absolutely
Bellicor
love them.
Is the only one.
Yeah, I've... Bellicor. Yeah.
Which is interesting because he's got a very similar head to Bellicor.
Yeah, they look very similar to Bellicor, even just the general body type and everything going on. Maybe we could see a return of him. Has he had a sculpt update?
No, not since they smashed the world, whenever he had the hand over the crowned Archaon.
Yeah, he wasn't happy about that.
No.
Yeah, Forge World also have some new Dark Angels coming for the Heresy era.
Ah, very nice.
Now, the Dark Angels are one of my absolute favourites chapters. I just love the iconic look and feel of them all. Less so the Heresy era ones, although this guy completely changes my mind on that. I think it's just because I don't like the black armor as much as I like the dark green.
Yeah, you see, for me, it's always the backstory of the Dark Angels that kind of puts me off them, is that, you know, they were kind of holding back at the Siege of Terra and waiting to see which side was going to win.
Mm.
Yeah, so they could have been traitors. They might still be traitors. You don't know.
There's a good pick. A while back, I wrote up an interview we did with Gav Thorpe. Mm. I found this good picture of Gav sitting there with a piece of paper. And I believe the paper had originally been to advertise a Q&A session he was going to be mm-hmm. doing on Reddit, but someone had photoshopped it, so instead it said, the Dark Angels are heretics. There, I said it.
Nice.
That was definitely the image I used for that interview. I know that was the one.
Yeah. What have we got down the Underhive then?
Yep. Well, we have some new characters on the way, okay. Including this Dome Runner, who... I don't know if Ben can be annoyed. It's not foot on rock, it's foot on pipe. Yeah. It's a really nice, brutal fighter of a character. Mm. And they're followed by the Ammo Jack, who, well, they live up to their name. They've got ammo covering every square inch of them. I would hate to see what happens if this person gets shot. That would be one big boom.
Mm. See, Necromunda is one of the parts of the Imperium that I love to explore, just because it's such a different look at the life of an Imperial citizen. You get that sense of oppression, that being ground down, that if you lose everything, you may end up moving and dropping right to the bottom of the hive, into the sumps, into the toxic waste where all the mutants are.
Well, talking about the top of the hive, they did this little teaser trailer, uh-huh. for Helmar's Justice.
Uh-huh.
Now, Helmar, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Jerry, he's the, they're the head family of Necromunda.
Yeah. So they haven't released Spires for Necro for this edition yet, have they?
No, but I think this might be so Arbides.
Oh, is it? Oh, that's very dull.
Now, they specifically say enforcers for Lord Helmar, so I think these are going to be his own personal guard coming
possibly.
In.
Possibly. His
police, basically.
Exactly, that's what the RBDs are.
Oh, no, I don't think they're going to be Adeptus Arbiters. Because that is something separate to Helmar's own
we'll
forces.
See.
Yeah,
because we'll
yeah, they're plundery cops, whereas yeah. the Underhive, the Spires, they were called Spirers, weren't they? Because they were on top of the spire.
Mm.
Anyway, they're just, you know, rich families. Mm, the rich yeah. is rich. And so they just go hunting and killing with all the best toys.
Oh, right.
As far as I recall, the Arbiters wouldn't be so concerned with planetary law. They'd be more about Imperial law.
Yeah.
Mm.
So they probably wouldn't concern themselves with gang fights in Necromunda as much.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I mean, like, the way it is always described is that each of the gangs is actually linked to one of the Uphive houses,
yes,
in some form or fashion, and it's them defending the territory and the manufactoria and the citizens working in that manufactoria to stay on target for all of the quotas and stuff, which is why they then fight.
Yeah. Well, I will say, Necromunda, for me, is probably the 40K universe game that most makes me want to play. I haven't played any 40K for a while. I've still got my Harlequins. They're still looking at me. Yeah, exactly. But Necromunda, just that more character-focused feel of it,
yeah.
it makes... I'm more interested in this than, say, Kill Team, which, yeah. again, feels far more generic. Necromunda has a character to it, especially when you go back and look at the older books and the also. I think you brought in the original rulebook for that?
Well, I brought in my hardback, so the second edition version of it.
Yeah.
Which they recently did a reprint of.
Did they?
I think there's a reprint kicking about out there.
That's handy. For people who don't have that, go and buy that. That's great.
Or people whose old copy like yours is falling apart.
My copy is not falling apart.
Don't go into the editing suite, Jerry.
If anything has happened to my copy...
It wasn't before he had it.
If anything happened to my copy... Everyone's dead.
I did nothing. Not my responsibility.
Moving on, we have a Painted Sisters of Battle.
Okay, this is something folks have been waiting for years. It's Plastic Sisters.
Yeah. Now we've seen this this model shown off a lot, but now we're getting to see it in all its painted glory. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be available as an advanced model mm-hmm. before the main release of the Adeptus Sororitas.
Yeah. I mean, like, I have been sitting thinking about what my second faction for 40K is going to be this time, and I think Sisters do look good.
They're
everywhere.
They've never had much appeal for me. I don't know. I suppose, again, it's because I hate any models with massive shoulder pads.
Those aren't massive. They're perfectly in proportion.
Nah, it's just one of my big pet peeves of miniatures. I really don't like oversized shoulder pads.
Yeah. I was actually recently listening to the latest novel for 40K, Plague War. Mm-hmm. Got it on Audible. And there's actually a battle sister in that who is just such a religious fanatic. It is crazy. She breaks into a place where they're holding a child who is basically filled with the Emperor's light. And she's just like, I'm taking a kid to help Gulliman. The guards are going, no, we have orders from Gulliman to keep her. No, I'm taking her. Shoots them all and takes the kid.
Good. That's exactly how it should be done. You know, the very first sister battle picture is in Rogue Trader, and she's shooting a space marine in the head because he's done something wrong.
Mm.
I think he's a rainbow warrior. Anyway, regardless, sod him. Yeah.
Okay, well, and that was the last time we saw the Rainbow Warriors.
Yeah.
Now, enough of all that 40K nonsense. We've got the most important announcements from all of Warhammer Fest next.
Get your bottles ready. You may need to take shots.
The Scouring of the Shire!
Is this one you've been waiting for,
I'm
guessing?
I didn't even know they'd be reprinting this. I am so excited for this. The last supplement they did, of course, we had most recently the Battle Company's book. Mm-hmm. I made sure to pick that up. I can't wait to play some skirmish adventures. But before that, we had, I think it was Gondor at War.
Mm-hmm.
So I expected it to be more of those sort of supplements moving forward. I didn't expect my love for the Scouring of the Shire to be paid off this early in the new run of Middle-earth's life.
They've got a lot of places they can explore with it, so, you know, you got lucky.
Yeah, and
everybody loves killing hobbits, which I imagine is why they've released it. It's like, how can we up the hobbit-killing quotient?
I beg to differ. Whenever I play my hobbits and they're getting slaughtered, the other side are usually cheering my hobbits on, because anytime the hobbits succeed in anything, it's 10 times more epic.
You know what that is? That's protective amnesia kicking in. That's just false memories. False memories. Mm. They're probably cackling and rubbing themselves as they killed all your hobbits.
Well, speaking of people who'd be cackling and rubbing themselves while killing hobbits.
Didn't he look, Liam Neeson's even there?
Actually, he does kind of look like Liam Neeson a bit. Yeah.
I don't know. You kind of got Dolph Lundgren on the left or the right there.
So these are the new human ruffians who will be coming out.
Harsh on Dolph.
And I actually recently finally watched Creed 2. Man, he got old.
So, yeah, these are the new ruffians. They're going to be leading, of course, Sharky's force. I think they're going to be new characters, possibly, because if you play ruffians, and I don't know why you would, they don't have much for them. They only have two characters,
mm-hmm.
and that's Sharky and Worm.
But are they fun to play?
The ruffians?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never seen them out on the tabletop. I've really? Never seen anyone use the ruffians.
I imagine battering seven shades out of hobbits all day long has got to be the most enjoyable thing ever.
I know what you're doing if you ever get dropped into Tolkien's world.
Oh, yeah.
You're going straight to the Shire with your happy stick.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, the Shire have some of their own happy sticks, and they've got getting some new characters as well. And it's not just the usual Shire militia we've seen. We're seeing a lot more individual character among these hobbits. Here we have two of the sheriffs, who I have a bunch of sheriffs in my army, and they're not worth the points.
Are these all new sculpts?
Yeah, these are brand new sculpts. These two I particularly like. I think Ben made the point of how, because there is a far more of a focus on the citizens of the Shire, these would be great as even just NPC characters to place in Bree or among Hobbiton or somewhere if you're doing a One Ring or Adventures in Middle-earth campaign.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I absolutely love these. They are definitely going into my army. I cannot wait for them release. Oh, we've got a few more here. This boy may become one of my new favorites. Whenever I play with my Hobbit army, I always feel Farmer Maggot running around with his scythe. This guy's going to be accompanying him in every warband with that fork.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to fork it to him. And then, of course, because if you're going to the Shire, you need some Hobbit holes.
So they're starting to do Hobbit hole terrain?
Yes. Well, this is going to be from Forge World, because most of the new stuff for Lord of the Rings is being done via Forge World.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about this is it's not the full terrain. This is a kit involving the front there with the windows, doors and everything, and the chimneys, all the little extras that you can then attach to your...
A big lump of polystyrene.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you do get a really good effect using these, but hobbit holes aren't hard to make. There are lots of guides on how to make your own hobbit holes.
Yeah, but having those resin cast pieces, I mean, like, if you got maybe two or three of these kits and you got a massive lump of polystyrene, you could just do that hillside with lots of them on different levels and do like a really nice feature table.
Yeah, but because they are from Forge World, if you get two and three of those, you're not eating that month. So, yeah. They are beautiful, and I cannot wait to see the game tables they make with them.
Yeah, yeah.
There is a few more extras coming along from Middle-earth as well, including Daoin for the forces of Rohan, this new hero. Mm. And he is followed along by the return of Golfimbal, who is a goblin war chief who attacked the Shire back in its history.
Good man.
Okay.
Yeah, and one of Bilbo's ancestors, Bandabras Bullroarer Took.
Oh, is this the guy who actually rode a horse?
Yeah, he was big enough to ride a real horse, and he hit this goblin war chief so hard he took his head clean off and knocked it down a rabbit hole, thus inventing the game of golf. That is actually in the books.
Yeah, but hearing that just brings me back to Billy Connolly on how golf was invented. Oh, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's great.
Yeah. No, you.
Oh, no, sorry, it was Robin Williams.
Robin Williams on that one, aye.
Yeah, apologies.
That's a good one. But, yep, stuff coming for the Shire. I could not be more excited. I am extremely happy to see this.
Okay, so that's enough for The Hobbit. We're going to move on, Sam, sorry. You got the wax lyrical, come on. Kickstarter time.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, so the next one is The Verge of War.
Yes. Now, this is actually one that isn't on Kickstarter yet.
Yeah.
This is coming to Kickstarter next week. Now, we actually talked to Verge, the guys behind Verge of War, last year when they first kickstarted their game.
Mm-hmm.
And they released it. They successfully funded and have delivered.
Yep.
With the first two factions of their 28mm sci-fi skirmish game. We can see... Yes. Some of them have magically appeared in front of us.
Yeah, because we actually got some early access previews. So we've got guys like this.
Yeah, these are from these are all currently available from their web store, these ones.
Mm-hmm.
These were from the first set, which created forces for the humans and the Saet Aggression Force, who are basically your greys, your
spear
alien
sharks.
Reptilians.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, yes, the Saet Aggression Force have the Shorks, who are space sharks, and space who are sharks. Basically their one of their slave races.
We have dinos.
Yeah, that's the Saet Aggression Force. That were one of the things that drew me to Verge of War when I talked to them last year. They've created the game with enough scope that you really can have anything going in it. So you've got greys leading dinosaurs, fighting with the help of the new Kickstarter they're going to be launching on Tuesday, pirates, and various different gods.
There is a pirate there.
Yeah, we do actually
have... actually got one of your little greys who's actually floating on a control console, which is quite nice.
Spear surfing.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, one of the coolest things about Verge of War is their free pose miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is something I haven't really come across before, at least with miniatures gaming, where a lot of their miniatures have been designed so you can pose them any way you like.
Yes.
Now, we got our chance to try that with three of them, to varying degrees of success.
Yeah, so we each got one miniature. So, Jerry, you got this one, our
spear
big
shark.
Lizard man dude.
Big shark there.
Shark.
Yeah. And It's quite nice. Yeah. You can see the pose is very different. You went for a very much planter attacking.
Yeah, he's just about to take somebody's head off.
Now, when I say free pose, I really do mean free pose. You can build these in any pose you like, even right down to the individual fingers.
Yeah, if you look at his hips and waist, you'll be able to see the ball socket joints because there's actually additional armor plating that I haven't put on yet that covers them. Mm-hmm. So, as you know yourselves, every joint is a ball socket, mm-hmm. which means you've got total flexibility at ankle, knee, hips.
Yeah.
Head, shoulders, knees, and toes.
Exactly.
Very much so.
When the Kickstarter first happened last year, they were showing them off built so that some of them were doing handstands and stuff like that. Just to do that, you know, full-on crazy kung fu movie pose that they had going on. The one I tried is actually one that is going to be appearing in the Pirates faction, and it's already fallen apart. As you can tell, I am not a very skilled modeler. These are definitely intended for people who really enjoy their modeling.
Yeah.
I am not good at modeling miniatures. I enjoy building ones, but I am not good at them. And
all right, so this is you, Sam.
Yeah, this guy near drove me to insanity, I will admit, with the individual fingers.
You see, the thing is, if you're a modeler and this is what you're wanting to do, this is great for you because you could have this guy flipping the bird if you want it.
Yeah.
If you really want it.
It's not just that. There's the variation in the packs as well. So, for example, my Shork could have had two of those
picks.
Or he could have had a massive two-handed one or sword. So there are options in that free pose one for you to actually go nuts with.
Same Sam, I know that, yeah.
Why?
Are you covering glue?
Some of that super glue is still wet. I just got super glue in one of the most annoying places you can get it.
Your lip. I've done that.
No.
Quietest day in the office they've ever had.
No.
I can imagine.
You see if you get a bit of super glue over the front of your fingernail and just right along there and it bleeds in, oh, it feels weird.
Yeah, well, leave you to dig that up. The Shork Boatswain that I failed to build spectacularly does come with a lot of different options, including a big coat you can give him, big range weapon, lots of different hand weapons that you can equip him with. I just really like that big anchor
hook for hands, except not a hook. A massive
stabby blade of
doom. He has a massive, massive anchor.
If
you're not a modeler like yourself, They do regular versions that are, you know, legs and arms onto body, and you're done type of, you know.
Although
sort of standard
they still
build.
Gave you some good options for the weapons.
I do quite like this guy with the claws.
Sure,
it's quite nice. And then for my own one, who I'm hoping is going to stay together because I think I did it right, is a big human knight mecha. So I give him a nice little hand axe, and of course a halberd, because you need halberds.
It was quite funny when I opened these up and I saw all the little bits and pieces. I did find it quite a daunting prospect. But weirdly enough, it was Tom and Cass who put this in perspective to me, neither of whom are miniatures gamers.
Do they build Lego?
Cass was just saying that how much he loved that sort of building and the more complicated it is, the better. So that would... her eyes absolutely lit up at the prospect of building one of these. And Tom just... He really put it in perspective by placing it on the opposite end of the spectrum from the Games Workshop quick fit models that you have. You have the ones that are there for you to get onto the table as quickly as possible. And then you have ones where the building of it is a more involved part of the hobby. It reminded me a bit of putting together Gundam kits, which weren't really my sort of thing, but I tried them out once for an article. And it really did remind me of all the little options you have for those.
See, for me, if you're going after a kit like this, the key thing to do is, and I noticed you didn't do it when you were doing your build, prep every single component first.
I did. I was washing every bit.
No. I mean, take off the gates, take off your mold lines, set it all nice and neatly to the side, organize and order it, and then start your build. I do notice
I did do that. I had it all on one side.
No, because I will took a look at this, and I actually found a couple of components, and I did take a knife to it and actually took off a couple of gates you missed.
Fair enough.
But what I will say as well, I do notice this is a younger company, because I am seeing these miniatures have been 3D resin printed and then sent into the casting. And I can actually tell that because of the way they've done it on a couple of points, because there's one or two components where they've laid it flat in their 3D printer and you can really see the layer lines. And there's another couple of points where they've actually missed cleaning bits of the scaffold. So you get the little tiny like 0.5 of a mil dot where the scaffold has connected still. So it's a really nice design, and I like the idea of having such modularity to it. For me, though, I'm a gamer. I just want to get it put together and get it on the table.
How did you find putting these together?
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah?
If I had another couple of hours, he'd be finished.
I see. So you still got more you think you could do for that?
Well, like I say, I still have the armor plates to put on between the sections, and you could sit down and really go to town with the actual build on it. Mm. And there were a few points where I was deciding how to build it. So I was getting up out of my chair and kneeling down or striking a pose or moving my arm and going, right, well, if my arm's twisted this way, then my elbow needs to be there.
I found myself doing that as well when I was arranging the hands and the fingers. Yeah.
Which, you know, I absolutely adore. I'm actually sitting there thinking, if you get the same size steel balls as those, because the ball joints are literally balls that go into either side. So if I get those and then I get magnets and magnetize the kit, so that all the sections just clip in. Could I have a fully poseable one there?
That would be pretty fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I do think this is also going to be great for anyone who loves to do conversion work.
Yeah.
So let's say there's a particular weapon you have from a different kit. You want to fit it on. This allows you to put it in there, and it's you're not having to, like, clip around hands and reattach guns and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, even on the one I did, I actually took and... So this cloak is actually meant to be a single piece, but I just took it and glued it on, so it was a nice little split one. So it's just tiny little things like that that you can just do very quickly to make it look cooler.
Yeah. Well, if we take a look at the Kickstarter,
let's go for it.
The new factions are actually going to take this one step further. So as you can see, it's an arrangement of the pirates, and the new factions are the pirates and the Asgard.
Uh-huh.
And here we have the boatswain. This is, of course, a special variant of that model, but the general sculpt there is the one I attempted to build.
You can really see different variants there. I need to show this to anyone who hates Foot on Rock, because it's Foot and Feet on Treasure.
Yeah, it's a great looking sculpt there. Mm-hmm. There you can see him sitting in the back with the rest of the space pirates.
Yeah.
And of course, I heard Pirates I was in, and I love that they kept that sort of classic movie freebooter look to them that I absolutely love.
Yeah.
And then you have the Asgard civilization. And the Asgard are supposed to be this ancient race of beings, probably one of the oldest in the galaxy, who go around playing as gods.
Oh, so Thor, Odin.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, there's something I want to showcase when I go a bit further down. Hopefully I can find it. Here we can see some demonstration of the free pose potential you can have for one model.
I do like the claymore above the head. It's quite nice.
Mm. Awesome. I like that guy with a walking stick. Who brings a mech with a walking stick? That's amazing.
He's a bit of a sir.
There's the guy.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go down a bit further, we've got the different races. The humans, who are the ones you were building there, Justin.
Oh, yeah. Very dull.
The Sait, the pirates, and the Asgards. And you can download and find out more about this all on the Verge of War website.
Mm-hmm. And they have downloads for the different codices.
Yep. This was the leader of the pirate captain, who I believe a model of we do actually have there on the table.
Yeah, I think I already showed him.
Yeah. Who, again, you can see can be assembled in plenty of different forms with that flowing cape, different head options, different weapon options.
Space peg leg.
Yeah.
Better than a regular peg leg because it's in space.
Exactly, yeah. So the boatswains, void rolls. Where is the... There's this one picture I really want to show. Here's the Asgard civilization. So you can see them decked out in Egyptian headgear on that one. And that's because the different houses of the Asgard are...
Different pantheons?
Yeah, they're different pantheons, exactly. Yeah. So the Ella are Greek gods, the Ra are Egyptian gods, the Aesir are Scandinavian gods, and you can assemble them to resemble whichever of those pantheons you prefer.
Scandinavian, clearly. Why would you not?
Because the Greek exists.
I'm with Jerry on that one.
Absolutely. Yeah. Norse gods, Scandinavian, I'm there.
Yeah, they're... But the models look absolutely incredible. The Asgard have a far more graceful look that sets them at odds with the pirates.
Mm.
Now, of course, I would choose the pirates, but I really love the statuesque look of the Asgard models because they do capture that sense of both being an advanced civilization and having one that has influenced. We've seen lots of people do the ancient gods thing, the ancient aliens aspect. Yeah, aliens. But I think this is the one that... this is approaching it in a slightly different way by going straight up, no, they're wearing masks. This is them pretending to be the gods. That's
so straight up it. They're doing it SG-1 style.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But we haven't really seen that as much with a lot of tabletop factions.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, that really appeals to me. I really like that look. It nice makes idea, them far more manipulative as well.
Well, the art style is gorgeous. The miniatures look good. The next question is, what's the game going to be like? That's what I'm thinking about right now.
Well, you can download all the rules from their website, so you can give it a go. We've got the sets now. You can give it a go.
As if I have time to play games. Yeah. I have too many games to play.
True enough.
Outrageous.
So there you have it. Verge of War, the new Kickstarter for the Pirates and Asgard, is going to be live Tuesday the 31st of May.
Cool.
21st, I mean. Sorry.
Right, 21st. What is our next Kickstarter then?
Next, we're delving into a bit of a roleplay app with Reroll to customize your D&D characters in pixel art. Now, there aren't many days left for this. I think only 2 days as of this going out. And it is being very successful on the Kickstarter. But this app will allow you to keep your D&D characters on your phone. It gives you a basic D&D 5th edition character sheet and allows you to create a custom pixel art for your character with a lot of customizable options for it.
See, I like this because the way we do D&D at the minute is, so we're on our Discord and we have like tons and tons of Google Docs where we're tracking everything. And we have the writable D&D character sheet, but figuring out how to use it was a nightmare. If I could get an app on my phone that I can just export that and send it up to the guys to show the latest, I'd be happy.
Hmm?
Yeah, I know how you feel.
You just tap on it. That's what fillable means. You put your cursor over something like name and then put your name in. Even I've mastered the fillable PDF document.
Yes, but you then have to bring it down and send it up in a format where it can be read and still be customized without losing the file that you just created, which allows you to customize and update again.
PDF.
I've never had that much problem with that.
My entire group had problems with this, okay?
Well, anyway, the main thing about this is it does allow you to create those customizable pixel art pieces.
It's a nice add-on to it. I mean, like for me, it's just the handiness of being able to track stuff. If I'm sitting there thinking about something, say the GM reaches out and say, okay, you're going to do a miniature encounter while you're away on your own between sessions, you can very quickly call it up and have your information right there.
Well, for me, actually, the pixel art does... It fills a gap that I hadn't really realized I felt when I roleplay online. Now, I much prefer pen and paper RPGs without the miniatures.
Mm.
I much prefer it without the miniatures because I tend to find the miniatures just get in the way of it. But even so, when I have played games of D&D without the miniatures, I tend to find I look up minis and buy them and paint them for that character even so, because I like having that physical representation, that something that feels more personal.
Look at what you do with Hero Forge. It's exactly what you're doing with that.
Yeah. Here you've got that option to create your personal your personal icon without having to go to the expenditure of buying a miniature that you're never going to use if you're playing a miniature-free game.
I wouldn't even mind that, just to go, hey, that's him.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Well, scroll on down. Let's see if there's anything else in here.
Yeah, lots of different weapon options allowed with the backers only. Lots of cool stuff here. Kickstarter exclusive pet slots.
And so they're busting through some stretch goals as well.
Yeah, they, like I said, they have been very successful on this Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't long to go on it, so if this catches your fancy, you really have to run over very soon.
This is actually one I'm very tempted to dip in on. I'm guessing it's not a huge cost or a huge outlay for anybody.
No, I think the initial one was about $11 to get like access beforehand and stuff.
Yeah, cool. This is definitely one I'm interested in. And I'd say everybody out there, if you're a role player, play D&D 5th. Give it a go.
There you go. Okay, moving on. We just have one more Kickstarter.
Uh-huh.
And these are the fawns from RGD Game.
Give me back my sock. There's one person out there who'll know that.
I do. Hi, not Austin. Know that. Yep, Randomness. The fawns from RGD Gaming.
Uh-huh.
Now, I actually got a chance to film a quick look with some of them. We got, I think, War Games Atlantic, who helped with the plastic to this, mm-hmm. sent in a sprue of these.
Mm-hmm.
And I built up a couple of them and did a quick overview of how I found putting them together.
All right, well, take us down through. Let's see what we get in it.
Very nice set. They are that classic form from Greek mythology. I'm trying to say this without just repeating my quick look. They are that classic look without being the chaotic beastmen we've become more used to seeing these days.
It's one of the reasons why Robert wanted to do it, because he's very active on Kings of War Fanatics face page. So it was to get something for the herd. And so I don't know if the War Games Atlantic did that initial sprue, but I don't know if that's actually the production sprue, because that's only three male. They're looking to do female, and then they're also looking to do additional one or two add-on sprues. So assuming they hit the stretch goals, the basic box will be 20 with like eight different bodies and eight different heads, male and female.
I do quite like the weapon designs and the variety that you're getting here.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite things about this. You had a lot of options for how you built these models.
Yeah, and that breaks the monotony of sometimes having this same character over and over, because even just changing a head, a shield, a weapon arm, and even just changing the angle on it slightly can really give you a sense of, you know, a real mixture of people who are alive.
Yeah,
yeah, which is what you need whenever you're rocking a couple of hordes of these in your, you know, your herd army.
Yeah.
I also quite like the fact that the weaponry is basically ancient Greek.
Yes.
So they're rocking, you know, well, Dacian and Thracian weapons, so they've got rompiers and falxes there, which is handy if you're playing things like Mortal Gods or that sort of thing. Mm. It gives you that mythological feel to them. They do look more in situ.
Mm-hmm. That's something nice. I would really like to see is an entire army of the herd based around the mythological origins, based around those ancient Greek depictions. So, it, as you said, they're coming up with some variations for these as well.
The last I heard from him yesterday, 2 days ago, this idea was stretch goals was a 10,000 was the basic sort of head in to get the guys, and then after that unlock the female poses, and then after that unlock fawns, or not fawns, sorry, centaurs, and the centaur would essentially be a conversion part, so that the torsos from the infantry set will fit on these, so you can mix and match. There's still quite a few days to go on this. I think there's nearly 3 weeks actually, and they're almost funded for the basic funding. But what he's done is he's rejigged things slightly. So he's going, okay, I might not hit all of these goals, but instead of unlocking eight infantry and then not getting to the centaurs, what if we only do the six infantry? So we do three male, three female, and then we do a single centaur horse part of the body. And then if they still get into the stretch goals, they can expand on those, but it means that centaurs would then be an option as well.
Yeah,
it
lets them dig in and get the product line out there for folks. Because it's a clever way to do it.
Yeah, because this Robert is essentially, he's just a store owner in the States who really loves Kings of War and wanted fawns, and nobody is doing plastic fawns without going super beastmen where they're all, every muscle is a bag of muscles. Yeah. You know, they're just ridiculously scaled. As you can see, and you may recognize the paint jobs because it's Andy Zeck has painted these. So Satanius Polinius off the site. So they fit in very well with, well, that's Foot Sword's Mortal Gods range, or even GW's Bretonians. They're not out of scaled.
Yeah.
They'll sneak into anything. He's also said he might do a add-on sprue of space rifles. Mm-hmm. If people want to use them as mutos in post-apocalyptic or the future. So you could have, you know, cloven-hoofed space mutos running about with, pew-pewing all over the place.
This kind of Kickstarter campaign really brings us back to why Kickstarter was first created, is someone has a crazy idea, a dream they want to bring out there and give to the world. And that's what this kind of campaign is. It's someone saying, I really love this. It's not being made. I want to see it made. Come and help me make it.
Mm. Yep. And I'm all for that, mm-hmm. especially because then I get centaurs for my herd. I don't have centaurs for my herd.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, let's close it out at that. Everybody, tell you what, get your comments in below. We've talked about a lot on this one. Did you enjoy everything from Warhammer Fest? Was there anything you weren't so happy with? What do you think of the Kickstarters? Are you looking forward to grabbing some of the Verge of War stuff? We'll move on. We will see you again tomorrow morning for the Weekender XLBS across on ontabletop.com.
Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.